This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome, sports fans, to a podcast you're not going to enjoy at all because it's about comics. We are the comic book staff at PlaceToBeNation.com, here for your third monthly installment of our Place to Be comic book roundtable podcast of doom. I'm Greg Phillips, one half of the Hard Traveling Fanboys, and I'd like to remind you that you can listen to this podcast, if you're not already, your friends can listen to it, on iTunes under Place to Be Nation, or on PlaceToBeNation.com, as it is a Place to Be Network podcast. With me, as always, my hard-traveling fanboy compatriot, Nick Duke. Nick, how are you?
Doing very well, and this week's podcast is brought to you by Glenlivet single malt scotch whiskey.
Excellent news for the Glenlivet Foundation and family, I'm sure. Todd Weber, how are you doing, sir, our West Coast branch of the Place to Be family?
Greg, how are you? I'm doing great. Here I stand in the light of day. Let the storm rage on. The cold never bothered me anyway.
Excellent, excellent. A little bit of poetry for our Sunday, or whenever you're listening to this afternoon. Russell Sellers, Montgomery, Alabama. How are you doing, Russell?
I'm doing really well, Greg. It's been a good day, a good weekend with some friends, and I'm ready to get into some more comics discussion because, you know, that's the highlight of my week.
Absolutely. As for most of us, I'm pretty sure. Tim Capel, representing Virginia. He has also done the fill-in files and assorted other things. Tim Capel, how are you, sir?
Power!
And there is the first power, incredible power, of our podcasting lives.
Was that Professor X or Alvin and the Chipmunks saying that? I couldn't really tell.
Toss up, take your pick.
Yeah, probably the same voice guy did both characters. So
I had to put it out there just for old times.
One of the greatest audio clips in the history of comic books, and it actually segues nicely into this week's theme, which is comic book television. It's the one thing that we haven't talked about on either of our first two incredibly wonderful and informative podcasts. Listen to them at placetobenation.com. We haven't touched on comic book television, and Mr. Professor, I'm sorry, he didn't go to school to be called Mr. Professor Xavier's loud proclamation of power from the classic X-Men television show of the 90s brings me to our first topic of the day, which is talking about the current state of comic book-related television shows. We've got things on the air right now, primarily Arrow on the CW and Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., on ABC, and this fall we'll be getting The Flash on CW, and we'll also be getting a show called Gotham on Fox, and here in a couple years we're getting a few Netflix properties that'll be Marvel characters getting their own tie-ins to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So, that incredibly long intro is all to set this question up. What are your thoughts on the current state of comic book-related television, shows that you enjoy, shows that you don't enjoy? Todd, I'm going to start with you.
All right, Greg. I watch, certainly, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I used to recap it for Place to Be Nation before it got so bad that I couldn't take it anymore. Unfortunately, well, not unfortunately. Fortunately, it actually has gotten a lot better since then, in my opinion. Arrow, I've been watching since the beginning, and every once in a while, I think it dips into being a very CW show with the love triangles and the secret crushes and things like that. But overall, I really like Arrow. I think it's very strong. We did not mention that the most popular show on cable television is based on a comic book, and that's The Walking Dead.
Absolutely.
I think that deserves to be in the conversation, even though it's kind of a loose translation from the comics. Well, you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Arrow are too in their own ways. So I think, honestly, the state of TV on comics on TV has never been better. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has certainly gotten a lot more connected to the films of the Marvel Cinematic Universe with appearances from Sif. And you got a little bit of a tie-in with Captain America coming in. We're getting some answers about Agent Coulson, what actually happened in Tahiti and how he came back, and the thing in the blue tube that I don't know that we're allowed to talk about yet. I don't know. Did everybody see that?
Yeah.
You know, is that Captain Marvel, or is that connected to the Kree Captain Marvel, do you guys think?
I think it's probably got to be a Kree, since Lady Sif actually mentioned the Kree in her conversation. Yeah. What do you guys think?
If you look, coming from my school of thought, which is the Ultimate Universe, there's some article, and I can't remember what it was, that I read online that actually drew some connections I hadn't even thought about. In the Ultimate Universe, Captain Marvel actually has the ability to walk around in normal human form, kind of like the Martian Manhunter, and his human alias is actually Philip, and it's not Coulson, but it's something else that ends in Sun, and so a lot of people are thinking that it could be possible that maybe Coulson turns out to be the MCU version of Captain Marvel, if that comes to pass. Now, I don't know if that's the direction they're going, but just an interesting angle from the Ultimate Universe that they could be tying in there.
It'd be a nice nod if it doesn't turn out that way. Kind of an Easter egg type thing. But I'm kind of in agreement with Todd and Greg. It really does seem like it's tying in to the Kree. The whole thing seems to be leaning that direction. But if you'll remember, Earth's Mightiest Heroes, that animated Avengers show, they really played up, you know, Captain Marvel's Kree connection, you know, that he is Kree, that, you know, the whole blue skin thing, that really seems to be headed that way. If that's not Captain Marvel in the tube, then I'm thinking that it is a Kree, and that, you know, that would be really cool for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. to start making that connection to those characters, and maybe even bring in the idea of the Skrulls, because I would love to see a Kree Skrull war start to play out on the on television and in the movies as well.
Does Marvel have the rights to the Skrulls, or is that still controlled by Fox because of the whole Fantastic Four deal?
You know, I thought that the Kree...
I mean, I don't know. I'm just asking. I figured you guys might know.
I actually think that it might be controlled by Disney, since they have control of the Kree, and that was such a big connection there. But those bonds are getting looser and looser by the day, because, you know, Quicksilver appears in both Days of Future Past and the new Avengers movie that's coming up. So the whole line is starting to get a little bit blurrier with who has what rights to which characters.
Yeah, that's an interesting question, actually, because I can see different studios owning the rights to different specific characters. But even in a case like Quicksilver, like you mentioned, it's like, for his Avengers connections, okay, we can use him in the Avengers franchise, but for his mutant/X-Men ties, well, that's Fox for you. So if they can split the difference like that, you would think for an entire alien race, it could definitely go either way, or both ways potentially.
Yeah, I don't see there being a problem with you know, both studios maybe laying claim to the Skrulls. Not that I think Fox would really use them, but who knows where their Fantastic Four reboot is going to go. But we're getting off subject here. We're going into movies again.
Yeah, that's never happened.
No,
another
never.
Possibility could be, you know, they haven't really revealed what Skye's whole deal is on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Is it possible that she comes out to be like a female Captain Marvel, kind of like you see in the comics right now with Miss Marvel, who became Captain Marvel?
Might see a real fit pitched by fans who want to see Carol Danvers, but I wouldn't be against that at all. I think that would be a really interesting take, though. I really am hoping for Carol Danvers personally to wind up introduced in this, and maybe for her to become the first actual Captain Marvel instead of introducing the Kree version.
Yeah, they can keep, you know, a Mar-Vell kind of character and still be true to the essence of the original Kree Captain Marvel, and just call Carol Danvers Captain Marvel, and it's a strong character, especially if you bring in somebody like Kitty Sackhoff, or I'm she's been linked to the role, but who knows, you know, who knows what they're going to go with.
And it'd be really cool if they put her on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as kind of a semi-regular character, because that show really does need some more like actual superhero ties, because it I mean, we're getting Deathlock and everything, but it needs a little bit more name recognition, which is something that I've been critical of the show since it started.
Yeah, from my end, I don't even, you know, I would be fine with it not even having a much stronger superhero tie-in. I think it would be cool if it did. You know, I enjoyed the Lady Sif episode, of course, and that was cool. But I would be cool with it just settling in and being a good show. Like, you know, get more. Yeah, I mean, honestly, like it. The last couple episodes have been better for sure. But I would like to see a little bit of consistency out of it and settle in on what it's going to be. Because I like the espionage episodes where they're trying to, like, go undercover and actually go on spy missions since, you know, that was the whole deal with S.H.I.E.L.D. in the beginning. But, you know, we'll see how it all wraps up. Todd, to kind of wrap up your end of the conversation, is there if you had to pick one to watch every week, what would it be?
Walking Dead, but if we stick to superheroics, I'd go with Arrow just because I am a DC fanboy at heart, and I love the little things they're doing with characters like Solomon Grundy. Even Harley Quinn got a cameo kind of the other day. And Green Arrow has always been one of my favorite characters, no matter going all the way back to Justice League 200. So Arrow, and I can't wait to see where they go with it because they definitely have a direction in mind, and they're not afraid to bring in elements of the comic book universe that people might not necessarily expect.
Definitely. Yeah. Let's move over to Russell real quick. Russell, what are your thoughts on the current state of comic book related television? In your mind, has it ever been better?
I'm with Todd, and I'm going to say no, it hasn't. This is absolutely the best time. If you're a comic book fan, television is becoming the second medium for you. Mostly for me, it's Arrow. Like Todd said, it does happen to skew into being a quote-unquote CW show occasionally, but as season two has gone on, it has become less and less that. I would say that this show could wind up on any network at this point and fit right in. It's never been a better time, and I mean, like Todd said, The Walking Dead is the most popular show on TV. I don't know many people who aren't watching that, besides myself. And it's not because I don't like the show. I actually really love the show. It just came to a point where I said, you know, I really hate waiting week to week for each episode, so I just started waiting for Netflix to get it, and I'm streaming it that way. And because I'm cheap and I want to get rid of cable. But Arrow is easily my favorite show, and like I was saying a minute ago, I do have some criticisms of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but I do agree that it has gotten a lot better towards the end of this season, and I really hope they finish strong because the mid-season finale was one of the worst episodes of any TV show I have ever watched.
It was awful, yeah.
It was. It was truly terrible. But they kind of came back strong. They came back with easily the most interesting episodes and the most entertaining episodes of the season once things started back. And this bringing in the possibility of the Kree bringing in Lady Sif, just getting a little bit deeper into the real meat of the story that was the more interesting part of the first half of the season. What's really got me excited is what's coming up. Some of the new shows that we're going to be seeing.
Well, and let me cut you off there for a moment because we're actually going to get to that in our next round of questioning. Sure. But you brought up something interesting that I want to bring up to you a little bit off topic, which is you mentioned mid-season finales, and that got me to thinking about all the breaks in the scheduling that shows like Arrow and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and even Walking Dead have had. Do you guys think that's an issue with not necessarily mid-season breaks, because every show does that now, but Arrow had a mid-season break, then took a week off later, then had an Olympic break, and then had another break, and I know Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is in the midst of a break.
Yeah, Greg, if you've been watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., their breaks have even been worse than Arrow's this year. Yeah. I mean, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was at one point, if I'm not mistaken, and you guys feel free to correct me on the specifics of this, but it was like, came back from the mid-season finale, aired two episodes, took a 3 or 4 week break for the Olympics, aired one episode, and then took another 2 or 3 week break, which they're just now getting ready to come back from.
That's right.
They did.
And that's not even touching Walking Dead's like 2-month-long mid-season break that they do every year.
They're not the only shows. Mini seasons,
Yeah.
And it's not just the comic book TV shows. It's like every TV show is doing that now. Mad Men did that same thing.
And Mad Men's was something like a year, right? Like, they took a full year off between, like, the first half of their last season and the second half of their last season, right?
Breaking Bad. Yes, they did.
Yeah.
Breaking Bad. It was guilty of it too.
Kind of an AMC hallmark.
Yep.
And it's become to that. I would say that I used to think that when they would do something like that to our favorite comic book shows, because we all remember what they did to Green Lantern, the animated series,
and Justice League,
and Young Justice,
and Young Justice. All these great shows. And I started to think, man, are they just trying to kill these shows? And then I start looking at the live action shows. I'm like, no, everybody is doing this now. And really, it's just a in some backwards thinking, it's a way of building up ratings that I've read several articles on it that try to explain it. And I'm just as confused as I can possibly be about the whole situation.
Yeah, you know, it seems like it doesn't hurt Walking Dead, obviously, because once they take their big break and they come back, and they're back until the show ends. But I think with something like Arrow, there is something to be said from a network standpoint. I don't think it's the show's fault by any means, but from a network standpoint, it doesn't make sense to me to break up, because viewers are all about patterns. Whatever night, I'm going to sit down and watch this show, whether you record it and watch it a certain night or what have you. And once you break that pattern, people tend to move on to other things and watch other shows.
And it's always so ill-advertised, you know, like Greg, I think you and I have had many discussions about how we'll watch Arrow and then like we won't know that there's not an episode the next week until we see the promo for the following episode. And it's like in 2 weeks, catch, you know, such and such.
And that's even worse for people. It's even worse for people who are watching it on Hulu, because we don't get that at the end of the credits. There is no advertisement for when the next episode is going to be. It's just going to either be in your queue or it isn't.
Yeah, so you just have to log on and hope that it's there, basically.
Yeah, and that's really kind of beneficial, because you know if you're on Hulu, it's going to be there no matter what. But if you're one of the folks who's like using your DVR to catch it, what happens if they suddenly decide to change its time slot? And you know you've got your DVR set to record this channel at this specific time.
That happened to me when Cartoon Network pulled Green Lantern. I wound up getting episodes of How to Train Your Dragon or something like that, the animated series, which I have no interest in. Yep, I'm like, wait a minute, where's my Green Lantern and Young Justice? And instead I got some other thing.
Oh, when I got home that weekend, I was pissed.
Oh, yeah.
That was a really bad time.
Yeah, well, and that sets up you, Nick. What about your opinions on the current state of comic book television? What are the shows that you watch? Which ones do you enjoy? Which ones do you think could be better? And what do you think about the overall state of comic book television compared to what it was 5, 10, 15 years ago?
Well, I mean, to echo what Russell and Todd have both said, you really it's hard to argue that you can't really make the argument that it hasn't, you know, that it isn't at an all-time high, not just in terms of live action, but even though I don't watch them or enjoy them, there are numerous, you know, animated shows out there right now for the kids and whatnot. Ultimate Spider-Man, which is an abomination, but some people like it. Avengers Assemble is out there. Beware the Batman, which I think just got pulled, which is a hilarious twist of irony, in my opinion, from Cartoon Network. But there are things out there for everybody. And then, of course, the live action stuff is just fantastic. Right now, Arrow is... Man, I understand all the criticisms it gets, but when I'm willing to overlook those, and when it hits, man, it hits on all the right notes. And it's, you know, you have the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which has been delivering just like, you know, fanboy pleasure for the past, like, 6 years. And you haven't really had that for the DC guys. And Arrow, since its debut, has put in so many things that are just for the fans. And it's complete fanboy service at times, but... doesn't bother me at all. I'm so thrilled as a DC fanboy to see nods like, you know, Harley Quinn's little cameo in the Suicide Squad episode, or throwing in writers' names as streets or buildings or locations or whatever. All that stuff.
Diggle, John Diggle, named after Andy Diggle. You know,
John Diggle. Yes. My dream, and I'm, you know, to veer into fantasy booking a little bit. My dream is for them to one day reveal that John Diggle's middle name is Stuart, and they do John Stuart Diggle, and he turns out to be like your version of the Green Lantern on the show. But
that'd
that's neither here nor there. But yeah, so Arrow would obviously be the one that I cannot miss no matter what. Walking Dead is one of the few shows my wife and I watch together. But to be honest, I'm kind of like getting to the point where it's. Even though they just came with one of the best episodes of the show a couple weeks ago with the
Hey, let's be careful on the spoilers. I think Russell hasn't
I have not seen any of this season.
2 weeks ago,
flowers. Look at the flowers.
With the flowers episode, it was fantastic. But it's a show that I find myself being less and less interested in as time goes on. I don't know what that is. I don't know if it's the pacing of the show. I really don't. But ever since really the middle of season 3, I've kind of tapered off in interest, and I'm still watching, and I'm not going to give it up, but I don't know.
I'm kind of there with you when it comes to The Walking Dead comics, actually. I got 8 volumes deep into it, got to the part where Laurie dies. It's the end of the prison arc for the comic book, and I haven't bought a single volume of it in over a year because I lost interest, and I think it was for those same reasons.
Yeah, I tried reading the comics too, and I think there's a scene when they're in the middle of the prison arc in the comics when the helicopter flies overhead, and that's supposed to close out one volume or something. And that's kind of the point at which I was like, whatever, and never read anything ever again.
Yeah, they say it kind of. I've been told that it comes back around again, but I'm a year and a half away from ever having read another volume, and man, I just don't know if it's coming back. It's a good thing the TV show continues to find ways to intrigue me.
You guys should check out the Walking Dead compendiums if you ever get a chance. They're massive, but the first one ends at the end of the prison, and it certainly picks up after that on the second one. And that's how my wife reads Walking Dead, even though I get all the issues, and it's pretty cool because it's definitely written for trades. The monthly comic is written for trades, you know, and story arcs. But the compendium, just there's no waiting. You can read this phone book worth of comics. And of course, it's going to be every 3 or 4 years.
It's so cool that we're in an age where, like, you can have these massive collections like that. Because, like, I have several, as my friends can attest, of these massive collections. And while, you know, they're more difficult to port around, it's also cool to be able to read the entire story in one sitting or what have you.
Oh, your Infinite Crisis Omnibus is one of my favorite collections I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was really good. And I bought that on a whim, just like hoping that it would be remotely readable. And it ended up, to me, I can't ever read that story differently again. Like, I don't think I can ever read just a standalone series again.
It puts everything in context so well. Like, that's the thing about these big collections. I mean, not for Walking Dead, because obviously it's all from the actual series. But these other big collections, you know, you get the side series or the tie-ins or the issues that set it up or whatnot. And it just kind of brings everything together in a nice package, I thought.
I thought you were going to say you couldn't read the omnibus because you couldn't physically open it.
that was a bit of a challenge at first, figuring out how in the hell am I going to open this and read it. But you find ways around it, I think.
Those things are good for your reading, entertainment, pleasure, and for home defense as well.
It does weigh about 23 pounds, I believe.
Yes.
That Infinite Crisis.
It omnibus can actually stop a bullet. So,
and here you go. If they ever do a Final Crisis one, you can use it as a very effective doorstop.
There you go.
Oh, yeah.
Well, actually, Tim, that sets us up for you. Comic book television, are there any shows you're watching right now? Which ones do you enjoy, not enjoy?
Man, you guys, how good has Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman, been this year?
You know, I really have enjoyed it. I'm just worried that they might get into some time travel and stuff like that. And
yeah, maybe some clones or some, like, alien invasion stuff.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit afraid that one might run off the rails. But no, between that and Nightman, you know, the Ultraverse really firing on all cylinders. And, I know we're recording.
Have you seen Mantis? You should see Mantis. It's awesome.
Oh, my God. Mantis, yeah.
X, the guy that plays Lex Luthor on Lois and Clark.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, John Shea, right?
Yeah, good actor, actually.
Great Lex Luthor, too.
Oh, yeah.
But no, I kid because I can't really speak very intelligently on this topic, seeing as I'm not currently watching Arrow, but I'm glad we're actually talking about this because I'd like to get more of an education in Arrow, especially given that from some of the recent stills I've seen, they've now incorporated the Suicide Squad, it looks like. Deathstroke, what's going on here? Like, this might be a thing that sort of speaks to me and I want to get on board with all of a sudden here. But I have a question for you guys, even though the question was directed at me. I have a hard time jumping on board with things that are standalone because I hate and fear change, and I feel like that could be a little bit intimidating. So what I'd like to know, is this truly a standalone series, or is this a continuation from the Green Arrow character who was played by, like, a different actor, I think, who was on Smallville, which I also didn't watch. But I know
completely different.
Like, so no connection whatsoever.
None.
No.
Interesting. Okay. And yet Green Arrow still kind of got a series without it being a Smallville spinoff. Okay, that's fine, though.
It's filmed in Vancouver. They have a lot of the same buildings.
Yeah, actually, but... isn't the Queen Mansion the same as the Luther Mansion from Smallville? Mansion.
It is.
And the Sia's Bar, I think, is the same as the coffee shop.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's the same set.
Of course, there are rampant rumors that while the show may be standalone right now, it may not wind up being standalone in the future. But, you know, that's another topic for another day.
Well, maybe I can get in while the getting's good. They've had one season so far, right? This is their second season.
If you have Netflix, the whole first season's available on Netflix. So.
Oh, tight. All right. Yeah, I think I'm going to start watching. I can't join a show in progress, especially if it's only two seasons in. Even if it didn't start off so strong, you know, I'm going to want to get caught up. So,
forewarned that the first season, for about the first half of it, you'll start to think that it probably does feel a little too much like the standard CW show, because it slips into some of those tropes. But by the halfway point and beyond, it becomes just pure awesome.
Yeah.
Well, when you mentioned love affairs and secret love triangles, I was actually I was hooked as soon as that.
I was going to say, Tim, I think it speaks to our mutual love of the old primetime soap opera.
Shit, dude. I'm talk about these shows taking mid-season breaks. I'm used to the days when Melrose Place would crank out 32 episodes a season.
I know.
Come on, guys. I think I'm going to get on board with Arrow now, having not watched any of it before. How about Amanda Waller? Is she like the director of the...
She's in there.
You know, it's...
Oh, yeah.
It's there. Well, you know, they haven't really done a whole lot with her yet, but they've certainly teased that she could be playing a major role in seasons to come, which would be fantastic.
And as you would expect, she's kind of one of the main characters of the Suicide Squad episode.
Yeah.
All right. So I think you've kind of sold me on that. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., again, I don't have a lot to say about it because I lost my patience about 6 weeks in. I just, you know, I talked about how I trade weight for comics now. I'm sort of a DVR binge watcher on some of these shows, even shows I really enjoy. So when it comes to something like S.H.I.E.L.D., which I haven't enjoyed, I don't know. I feel like life's too short to be giving over an hour of my life on a Tuesday, Wednesday night or whatever to watch something that I find a little bit exasperating to actually sit through. So I haven't hated it. It really hasn't been worth the time. Not surprised to hear that may be turning it around, but again, I think I made the right choice in just DVRing that.
I'm assuming you stopped watching before the mid-season finale, which would have been a good time to stop, because that was, as Russell said, that was, to me, one of the worst episodes of television I've seen in years.
The bridge.
My God. Right? Yeah, so predictable, so cliche-ridden.
To piggyback off something Russell said, though, I think one of the things with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., everybody keeps saying that it's getting better. Much like, you know, Russell, you just said that Arrow, you know, the first few episodes, it kind of had to find its way. And it, maybe this is just me, but I really like the episodes on both shows where they're dealing with the overarching story of the entire season much more than I do the little standalone episodes that have been happening.
Fully agree.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has so many episodes that just kind of, I don't know, they stand on their own merits and they don't really tie into any of the larger stuff that's going on. And those are the ones I find myself frustrated with, whereas every time they do an episode dealing with the clairvoyant or the girl in the flower dress or whatever, that's when I'm like, oh, I'm hooked. You know, then I'm in all on board, kind of like with Arrow in the first season. As soon as they introduced, you know, the big bad of season one and actually went with that storyline, that's when it really, even though I was enjoying it before, like took it to another level for me.
It just seems like they're trying to please all the people all the time, and they're pleasing none of the people all the time.
Exactly.
They're trying to have this mythology, but at the same time, they're like, well, we can't do this because that might show up in the movies, or this is already earmarked for something else. So they kind of tease it, and I think as far as I got was like the Graviton teaser, and even that was kind of, oh, really? That's it?
Yeah.
I was like, okay.
I've asked.
Mm-hmm. That was frustrating, but I'll give Arrow a lot of credit for this season because those filler episodes are way fewer and further between.
And they're really good to me.
Even the filler episodes wind up finding found a tone that seems to find a way to fit in with a larger story and even advance individual character plots and actually spend time developing some of the main characters, which has been really great. The first season didn't really do that so much, like Nick was suggesting, the filler episodes. They didn't really spend too much time on that, and I think Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is kind of experiencing that same problem with its first season in that they maybe didn't know if they're going to get a season two, so they start trying to pack in as much as they can into that first season because they're like, well, what if this is it? What if this is all we get? Mm. And if they get renewed, it's like, oh, well, we can kind of spread things out a little bit more and start really getting into the meat of this and making it better. And I use Arrow as a prime example of that because that's how their first season went. But by the time they knew they were getting a second season, things really smoothed out, and then season two just hit the ground running and hasn't been anything but awesome since the beginning.
And that's fitting because look at the source material. It's like you're never going to run out of ideas. You know, you've got 30, 40, 50 odd years plus of material to mine. So
with
why
more
not
coming
hit the
all the time?
Yeah, why not hit the ground running? So that's what frustrates me, I think, with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Well, that's talking about some of the frustrations of the current shows. One of the things, before we get going, I should mention that I'll just say that Arrow is my favorite of the three. It's probably my favorite show on television right now. But I've been kind of into it since the beginning. But the early episodes, it took a few episodes to grow on me and be what it is now. But what's cool about it is it's one of the few shows I've ever watched where you can watch an actor grow into his role. I think when the show started, Stephen Amell was, you know, just kind of a cookie cutter normal actor, and I think as the show has progressed, by the midway point of the first season, to me he is Oliver Queen now, and I can't, you know, it's hard for me to picture anybody else playing him, and that was pretty cool to see all of these characters, really, these actors growing into their characters through the course of that season and now into this season, has been really cool, and I also enjoy The Walking Dead a lot. Without spoiling anything, I've really enjoyed the last couple episodes, especially. There were a couple of drop off episodes after the mid season break, I thought, but this last two have been phenomenal, and really the whole season to me has been excellent. But yeah, Arrow would be my top choice. But let's talk about. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, Greg, I just wanted to throw something in there. You talk about Stephen Amell growing into his role, and you said it's hard for you to imagine, like, anybody else playing him at this point. To me, he's almost created, like, this... As a Green Arrow fan, it's always been, like, there's the interpretation of the Mike Grell, Longbow Hunters, very dark, gritty, urban hunter kind of version of Green Arrow. And then there's the more comedic, you know, Errol Flynn, overly liberal, the one that Kevin Smith wrote so well and has been used in other incarnations. And it's weird because I almost find myself thinking Stephen Amell is like a perfect hybrid of the two. He's like the perfect middle ground. And to me, he stands alone now as like this third version of Ollie Queen that I never knew kind of existed that I love so much now.
Definitely.
You can climb that Selman ladder like nobody's business. I have seen that one.
that's one of the more impressive workout routines. I mean, not that I couldn't do it, of course, but...
Arrow, well, yeah, also, I mean, I did it this morning, but...
Right. The action sequences on Arrow are better than any other show that's currently on TV. It's really well-choreographed action.
Oh, and it's really spoiled other so-called action shows for me. Like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I even remarked to Nick after the Sif episode, it was a good episode, but because I'm such an action movie aficionado, I thought the fight scenes were not well done. I thought they were kind of... poorly shot fight scenes, and I was like, man, because Arrow for the most part has done a really good job, particularly anytime you see Slade Wilson in action.
And the guy who plays him is just nailing it.
It's absolutely fantastic.
But let's move on to the future, and I want to start with you on this one, Russell. The future of comic book television. Shows that, this is a two-pronged question here, shows that you're looking forward to that have already been announced, and is there a show out there that you would like to see, try to limit it to one, a show that you would like to see that hasn't happened yet and hasn't been announced?
So I guess we'll start with one I'm looking forward to, because there are so many coming down the pipe, because the one I'm most looking forward to, of course, is Flash. Grant Gustin just nailed it perfectly as Barry Allen whenever he was introduced on Arrow. And when I was really... unfamiliar with him, I knew that he had been on Glee, before that, but that's a show I don't watch. So I had never seen him in anything. And I will admit that I was a little concerned, given his background and not knowing what we were going to be in store for. But when I saw the two-parter episode that introduced him, he was Barry Allen. He just hit the right tone. He just nailed the character so well. And after seeing him in that limited role that he had on the show, I was like, man, this guy is a leading man. He can stand out front and carry his own show. It was just perfect. And
it was very surprising in a good way performance.
It was. It was mind-blowingly good. And now I'm so pumped for him to have his own show. I've been following the filming of that show very closely, and I love the costume that they've designed for him. I think it's very modern. It's very it seems like it would be kind of practical as well, and it's even traditional in a lot of ways. It keeps a lot of the same look from the comics. So it's kind of a DC fanboy dream seemingly coming true. I just hope that it really delivers. But I mean, everybody kind of knew that one was coming, but I do have to give a small shout out to one that hasn't garnered quite as much attention with the new Constantine series that's coming to NBC this fall. When the first stills of that came out, I can't remember the guy's name, but he's a guy playing Constantine. They got the look perfectly, and the fact that he is British, just, you know, that I'm already sold on at least checking out the pilot.
Is that something that you think will be in any way tied to the shows that we're getting on the CW or the Batman show on Fox? Do you think these will be tied together in any way or completely separate entities?
Or the movie, for that matter.
Yeah, good point.
I think they're going to be separate as far as all the TV shows go. I mean, Arrow and Flash are obviously going to tie together. They're probably going to share some plots, and I think that would be to both shows' benefit, actually, to cross over with each other. Not right away. Let Flash establish itself on, you know, get its feet under it, if you will, pun. And then, you know, eventually start sharing a storyline. And I think that the Suicide Squad would act as a really great bridge between the two shows. But as far as Gotham, Constantine, and then there's a Vertigo comic called iZombie that's being developed over at CW as well. All of those shows are going to wind up being separate from each other. There isn't going to be any real connection. And I also don't think that Gotham is going to wind up being in any way a prequel to the Ben Affleck Batman that we're going to get in the Man of Steel sequel. But on that note, if WB and the folks over at CW are in any way smart, if they have even half a brain, they will sit down together, get Zack Snyder, Mark Guggenheim, and Andrew Kreisberg, Jeff Johns, David Goyer, whoever else is involved with those movies and those TV shows, sit them in a room together and figure out how to link those two shows together. And I can already tell you, from the tone of Arrow to the tone of Man of Steel, this should not be hard. This should be exceedingly easy.
It should be
a no-brainer. And on top of that, they want to put a Justice League together. Here's an idea. Let's have the Flash be established in a TV show that will allow people to get familiar with him. You know, build him up and then place him over in Justice League. No need to give him a movie. No need to do an origin flashback or anything. He's already established on a TV show. Hit the ground running, so to speak. And it would be such a missed opportunity. And I've wrote about this on a Seller's Point article. Check out placetobenation.com for that shameless self-plug over.
Oh, we'll get many more of those out of the way before the show's over.
Oh, sure. But it would be a gloriously missed opportunity to not link those shows together. And I'm not saying that Arrow, like Stephen Amell, he doesn't have to have a major role in a Justice League film. Green Arrow doesn't have to be a prominent member. He could have a cameo good enough and maybe just mention that, hey, look at all that destruction that happened in Metropolis, and there are aliens that exist. There you go. Just mention that on Arrow in an episode. You don't have to go into any more detail than that. Just let these things exist in the same universe so that you don't have to spend so much screen time developing all these characters characters and taking away from the larger story, because you only got maybe 2.5 hours to get it done.
One thing I've always, you know, like you were saying, Russell, tying in, I've always thought it was a good idea in the first season, and I don't want to spoil too much for Arrow, but they teased and went to a certain location from the Batman mythos, teasing a certain secondary character, also rumored to make an appearance in Batman versus Superman. Why sure. not include him on Arrow in an effort to set that character up, given the fact that he's probably not going to get very much screen time in a Batman versus Superman movie, and that cements the link between the two things. Greg knows what I'm talking about and is probably sporting a chubby just at the mere thought right now.
Oh, yes. Every time I think of said character.
As am I, because he's my favorite character, too. And he would fit in so well as like maybe a special guest star for an entire season of Arrow. I would love to see a team up between those two.
Especially the difference in his character and the Stephen Amell portrayed Oliver Queen, who's definitely a little more rough around the edges. So
yeah, it would. I mean, that would be wonderful. And then Greg, that would just be the tops thing for both of us if they were to say, man, this guy was really good. Why don't we give him his own show?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think anybody would want to see a Gnort show. Really?
Well, who
are you talking about?
You say that now. Gnort has built an audience for years, my friend. And if ever a character has earned his shot at the big screen, let's forget about all these other characters. Let's throw Gnort in there and see if he can carry his own movie.
If I ever get a big screen adaptation of a guy and his Gnort, that's pretty much the end-all, be-all. Where do superhero movies go from there? There is nowhere, really.
We were talking about Gnort this whole time. I thought we were talking about Quiltman.
What Quiltman?
Quiltman could be the villain.
And Batmite, of course.
Batmite. Yes, perfect.
Russell, I think you have too much faith in Warner Brothers as a corporate entity. They're really struggling to get even Batman versus Superman made. I mean, they put this tentpole for years to come, years away from now. I wish there was the synergy that would allow them all to interconnect, but I just don't have faith in them. They're getting their butts kicked by Marvel as far as the cinematic universe goes. They've got a 5-year head start on DC. I'm pessimistic about the whole thing, to put it mildly.
So I'm trying to remain an optimist that it can work. I want to be, even though, you know, all evidence to the contrary, with the exception of the fact that Man of Steel was awesome, and that I actually think that the sequel has all the chance in the world to turn out fine. But I look at the new president of Warner Brothers, the guy who's really just taken the reins and is starting to really get involved with the filmmaking. He has been a friend to DC Comics for a long time, and now that he's in a real position of power, he's sounding very ambitious with trying to develop DC Comics properties, which is a far cry from where Warner Brothers was before, because it really seemed like they were weary of the idea of superheroes, and they just wanted to concentrate on adapting more Harry Potter, and if they did any superhero at all, it was just going to be, you know, however many Batman movies they could squeeze out of Christopher Nolan and David Goyer. But
and the answer will always be not enough.
That is true. That is it's unfortunate that Christopher Nolan feels like he's had enough, and that they probably couldn't pay Christian Bale enough money to come back and do it again. But
gosh.
You did it. You went there first.
And yes, I'll give a special shout out to Bane Cat as being the funniest damn thing I saw this week. And if you haven't watched it, YouTube it. It's good stuff.
But first, visit placetobenation.com.
Yes. Yes, but first go there. In fact, I may include Bane Cat in my my next new hotness, just to put it out there, because more people need to see that. But your other question, Greg, about what show I would like to see that hasn't been announced. I've said it before, because I think that maybe it would work. I would love to see a Teen Titans live action series. I think that could be done. The reason I think it could be done is because I saw how well Smallville started to come together in its latter seasons. they really did focus on the idea of developing superpowers and showing how they could be done on screen. And I think with CW's success with Arrow, and if they have enough success with Flash, that might be a cool teen drama to put on television. And you can't, I would be hard pressed to be convinced that Teen Titans wouldn't make for interesting television for a wide audience.
Very cool. Well, let's move on to you, Tim. Is there a superhero show that's around the block that you've heard about that you're interested in checking out? Or is there a show that hasn't been announced, that hasn't been done yet, that you would like to see, or both? Go ahead.
I am so geeked for these Netflix originals coming up. Daredevil, Luke Cage, Iron Fist, Jessica Jones, all culminating in a Heroes for Hire. I think that's a really good approach. Whereas any one of these individually would be kind of a tough sell, when you create the perception that they're part of a larger universe, which the Marvel Studios film franchise has been doing for years, now you kind of bring that down to a micro level and say, okay, here's the same thing, but in television. So whereas you might not be so inclined to watch, a Luke Cage regular series, if you know it's going to be part of something else and building towards something else, you'll be on board with that. So it's a perfect example of that kind of synergy that we were talking about before, that Warner Brothers seems to be missing. I have said for years that Daredevil would work much better in the context of just a serialized drama on television. It's tailor-made for that. The courtroom proceedings, it could be a kind of a police procedural, but without the police investigative part, you've got the superheroics, right? So I think week in and week out, that could really deliver. So I'm looking forward to see what they do with Daredevil as a property for television, albeit on Netflix, of course. But
and the beauty of Daredevil is you don't have to worry about, like, I would think you would have to worry about incredible special effects or anything. You could focus on the
This is all kind of low budget street level stuff, so it should work. Like I said, on that micro level, this is like, it's not the Avengers, but it doesn't have to be. It can still be very true to the source material and, knock it out of the park at the same time. I hope it's the first of many more to come. Heroes for Hire being the culmination of this, there's also a lot of characters that could work really well and exist in that same vein. You look at maybe like a Moon Knight, for example. Especially the, I don't know if you guys have read the sort of contemporary take on Moon Knight, the most recent series from Warren Ellis. Maybe the best thing Warren Ellis has written, at least in terms of, just superhero comics since, maybe Next Wave, which I don't even count as like a superhero series, really.
Tim, I'm not that familiar. Tell me, does he keep like the split personality kind of schizophrenic aspect of Moon Knight, or is that kind of thrown to the wayside?
Yes and no. It's not thrown to the wayside, but he sort of draws a line under it and says, well, I was a little bit crazy, but it's not my fault. He definitely embraces the supernatural origins of Moon Knight wholeheartedly, where he's sort of the host of this Khonshu, the mystical spirit of vengeance, where these are kind of different expressions of this mystical element, so to speak. But at the same time, he's still human. He's not, he's vulnerable. He's flawed. He's kind of a tragic character, if you're at all, well-versed in the exploits of this particular character over the years. He's been around since, the 70s, going back to Werewolf by Night, but he's, there's been a lot of different takes on that character, and I feel like Warren Ellis sort of pulls them all together, incorporates what's worked in the past, and also what hasn't, without really invalidating anything that's come before him. So, and that's sort of one of those things I was worried about. I was like, okay, Warren Ellis coming into this, he's going to do his own thing and toss a lot of shit out the window just because he doesn't want to deal with it. And that's not been the case at all, really. So definitely recommend that series. But, you know, in terms of the character, I think he could work well for television. Looking at some of these other more street level heroes, you know, you've got like maybe The Runaways, which was a series that, you know, goes back to, I think, 2003 when Marvel
Brian K. Vaughan, right?
Brian K. Vaughan started it, yeah. And then
hasn't that been rumored for an adaptation of some sort for a long time now?
It's been rumored for a while. I feel like Marvel has sort of mismanaged the property a little bit, where they had a lot of momentum with these characters and with their series. And to their credit, they really tried to keep it afloat, even though the sales didn't necessarily warrant it. But once it did, once that axe fell and it did get canceled, they sort of let it fall by the wayside. And it's a shame, because there was a time when, you know, that iron was hot and they really could have struck. And I don't know if they've missed their calling, but there might still be some potential there to build that brand back up and at least do something with the characters. That's another one that I feel like could be pretty ripe for the pickings if you wanted to develop it for a series. But beyond that, you know, looking at stuff like Gotham that's coming up, I was hoping that would be more in line with like Gotham Central, which was a great series. But
oh yeah, yeah, one of the best.
Apparently, they're taking that in a different direction. So, oh well, I guess. Sandman, I heard that Joseph Gordon-Levitt is doing like a film treatment of that, right? He wants to.
Yeah, that's the plan.
That's the plan. I always thought that would be a better fit for television also. I mean, I really like Joseph Gordon-Levitt, don't get me wrong, but I don't know that I really want to see that as a film. Certainly it could be a series of films, but here again, I see that more as like getting the HBO treatment, you know? Series of, you know, maybe finite mini series or something along those lines.
Well, let's move ahead now to get some of Nick's ideas here. Nick, any property that you would like to see developed that hasn't been, and also any of these upcoming shows that interest you the most?
I mean, like you guys mentioned, Flash obviously would be the one that interests me the most, I would say, just because it's going to have that link to Arrow and is really setting the stage for you know, this DC television universe to be expanded from the initial point that was Arrow. To touch on Gotham real quick, like you guys said, I'm not thrilled about it not being a real Gotham Central show either. I'm kind of bummed about it being a Smallville-like, Bruce-centered show. But one thing that we're going to get from every indication I've read is that while, yes, it will explore the origins of Bruce and his growth from, you know, tragedy-riddled young child, we're also going to get to see young Jim Gordon. And that's even, I mean, this Jim Gordon is younger than the year one Jim Gordon that we're all so familiar with. So this has really got an opportunity to do some things with a character in Jim Gordon that I'm overly fond of. And that's what I'm most excited about that show, is the Jim Gordon aspect of it. And I think also, just to throw this out there, because I love the guy and love the character, Donald Logue playing Harvey Bullock was a home run for that show, in my opinion. Like, in terms of my own personal interest, I know some other people may be like, who's that, or what's the big deal? But for me, like, throwing those two concepts and characters together, character with actor, I'm pumped. So those are the big ones. Preacher, you know, it's a little bit further down the road, but that's another one that I'm really excited about. And I'm excited that it's not going to be a film, actually. I'm more excited about being an AMC television show than I would be of a film franchise, just because I feel like there's the opportunity there to tell the story in a serialized format and not have to worry about box office numbers and so on and so forth, because it seems like anything that AMC turns out these days is just a ratings hit. In terms of things that haven't been made that I feel like could be, I'll go a little bit outside the box, and I'll say, for years we've heard rumors of a live-action Star Wars series. You want to do a live-action Star Wars series, and yes, I recognize it would require recasting major roles that people find to be iconic, but there's no better place to start than Brian Wood's Star Wars series. And yes, it doesn't have the potential to be a multi-season thing, but if you wanted to do a mini-series or a one-season, two-season, limited, you know, 13-episode run kind of thing, Brian Wood's Star Wars series would be a perfect, perfect gap filler between A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back. For anyone who hasn't read it, it has such a great cinematic feel. It's fantastic. And it wouldn't require an in-depth knowledge of the Star Wars Extended Universe. If you know Star Wars, if you've seen the movies, that's all you need. Jump in, do a television show off of it. I think that would be great if they're going to do live-action Star Wars on TV.
That's what I like to hear, speaking of that Wood series, because I'm somebody that never really got into the Extended Universe much. I would read about it on Wikipedia, but I couldn't be bothered to actually follow along with
it. No, if you've seen Episode 4, it picks up shortly after the events of Episode 4, and it kind of serves the same purpose as... if you remember Shadows of the Empire, the old book and comic book series and video game kind of filled in the gap between Empire and Return, this kind of does the same thing for A New Hope and Empire.
Very cool. Well, let's move
on.
Go ahead.
Didn't the old Marvel series, when they licensed Star Wars before it was really anything, like back in the late 70s, early 80s, didn't it try to do the same thing? But
I'm not really sure. It may have. But this is kind of doing it in a contemporary setting and kind of...
Yeah.
Because at that time, as I recall, the Extended Universe was a kind of a thing that was just kind of getting off its... Just kind of, you know, starting to grow some momentum. So much Extended Universe. I remember a couple of years ago, being the huge Star Wars nerd that I am, I wanted to go back and read all the Extended Universe stuff. But I'm someone who wants to read it in chronological order. And if you've ever had any experience with the Star Wars Extended Universe, they don't release things in order. They will give you a reading order and then release a book that takes place back at the beginning and screw up the entire reading order. So I found myself reading novels,
constantly
finding things being released that happened before, you know, where I was at in the reading order or whatnot. So I got really frustrated with that. So the idea of something coming along and just kind of saying, all right, that's one thing and I'm going to do my own thing is really, really refreshing to me. And it's one of the reasons why, like, I know a lot of people are bummed that the upcoming new trilogy is likely going to throw the Extended Universe out the window. But to me, it was so convoluted, you know, it was hard to follow at times, even reading the few novels that I read. And I think it's really best to just start with a fresh start and let audiences come in without having to have a knowledge of that, because it's kind of ridiculous to expect people to have read novels in order to see a film, I think.
Maybe some will disagree with me, but I always thought the way that the Extended Universe brought Palpatine back after the end of Jedi was one of the more ridiculous.
But there's cases of that throughout the Extended Universe. I believe they brought Vader back at different points. There were cloning programs they pretty much used as a deus ex machina or whatever you want to call it to basically bring back any character from the past they wanted to bring back. They brought him back, and it didn't really
even
matter.
The man they call Vader.
Well, yeah, I would think that anyone who's we have lots of special guests on this show.
Go ahead, Tim.
I think that anyone who's really invested in the expanded universe has to realize that George Lucas, for starters, not that he's the current the caretaker of Star Wars any longer, but whoever is the current caretaker of the proper Star Wars franchise as a property, as a piece of intellectual property that's going to have movies developed and this, that, and the other, is not going to share your same enthusiasm for, you know, stuff like Han and Leia having a bunch of kids and two of them have gone rogue and one of them's dead. You know, you kind of lose track of this stuff. You can't expect that the people who are developing these things for a mass audience are going to be that invested in the same minutia. And I'm not, you know, dissing the expanded universe at all. You know, if that's your cup of tea, great, but you can't expect that it's really going to be the series Bible that you want it to be necessarily.
Yeah, and I mean, it's kind of the same thing as going to see any other like comic book franchise on the big screen. While personally, I would love to see a straight, you know, panel to screen adaptation of something like The Dark Knight Returns, at the same time, there's something to be said for a movie that doesn't directly take its cues from a comic so that I don't know every beat that's coming. If you've read the entire expanded universe and you know everything that's about to happen on the big screen, I mean, That's
what's the point? Yeah,
you know, that's great in one regard as an adaptation and as an homage to something you love so much. But for everybody else who doesn't have that same respect for it, yeah, they could still enjoy it, but they may not get as much out of it as they're supposed to as they would with a fresh adaptation, I guess.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to Todd, and I'm going to ask you the same question that I've asked them. Are there which of these properties is coming up appeals to you the most or has you the most excited? And also, is there a character or a property that you would like to see developed for TV that hasn't been?
You know, I
am both excited and very, very scared of Flash and Constantine. I think there's a lot of potential. I hope that it stays very consistent with Arrow as far as the quality and the style, as far as Flash goes. Constantine, I think, is a blank slate. I do like what I've seen so far, but this is NBC, and NBC can mess up things, although Hannibal, I hope it's a lot like Hannibal and not so much like Dracula for current NBC shows.
Yeah, that one was rotten.
So I would love for there to be an HBO-type Constantine show where you can get a little more graphic with the Satanism, the mystical nature of dealing with demonic possession and arcane rituals and sex with Zatanna, but that's just me. I'm looking forward to and being scared, but I'm really, really excited about the Jessica Jones series coming from Netflix. I'm a big fan of Alias, the Marvel comic by Brian Bendis from the early 2000s. I think that, as a standalone volume, is just awesome. I think it would be a great show. It lends itself well to a street-level private investigator story. You know, we have the story of a former superhero who was disgraced and turned away from superheroics and is solving crimes, but still has these ties to the Marvel Universe in a different way that you would normally see from, say from a Captain America film. So I think that's going to be exciting, and especially when they come together as the Heroes for Hire or the Defenders, I think it's going to be awesome. Also, like that they're all in the Netflix style, they're all dropping at the same time. So you'll be able to watch the whole thing in one fell swoop, or at least each show. I don't know the exact schedule, but Netflix drops things all together. You get to see the whole series is at your own whim, like you've done with Orange is the New Black and House of Cards. As far as shows go that I'd like to be seen, I'd like to see made, I would have to say the Jack Knight Starman character would lend itself well if done right.
What a great outside-the-box choice. I hadn't thought about that.
You know, you put that on AMC or maybe FX, even though they don't have a lot of DC ties, although Fox is got the Gotham show, a better quality cable network with prestige television. I think you could do a well-thought-out 13-episode arc of Jack Knight per year, you know, and with the ties to the Ted Knight character, to all the other Starmen, Mikal and... you know, the talks with David, I think that could be really, really cool. It doesn't even have to intersect with the other shows. I think the Jack Knight Starman character and his interactions with both the Shade and the Mist, the various Mist characters in the Mist family, I think there's enough that you could really, really have a special show there. So,
I really agree, because he's got that character and those particular family of characters, I guess you would say, have their own mythology deep enough without any connection to the larger...
Yeah, and even though it was a very special thing when he would cross over with, say, Shazam or the Justice League or Justice Society, eventually with Stargirl, I think you could just have this self-contained universe featuring the Jack Knight Starman. You don't have to take him into space. That space arc might not necessarily work on television, but everything else. And, you know, James Robinson, who's an excellent, excellent guy, has some film work, some TV experience too, so he could still be on board as a producer to keep things from getting too wacky or too far away from the character. So,
is it wrong that I've always kind of read the Jack Knight character as John Cusack in High Fidelity?
Not at all. I read him the same way in the second. I didn't in the first volume, but in the second volume, I kind of read him the same way.
Or maybe, in fairness, John Cusack's character in High Fidelity as Jack Knight, because, you know, Starman came first.
Definitely.
So, but yeah, that's
reasons
a great
I agree
pick.
With that. Number one. No, I'm just kidding.
Could John Cusack still? No. Anyhow. But, yeah, that's a great pick.
Great pick. Yeah, I guess I'll go now before we have to take a little break here. I'm going to have to say Flash is also my most anticipated, because I'm a huge fan of the character in the comics. I think he has one of the, after Spider-Man, Batman, maybe the X-Men. I think he's got one of the best rogues galleries in comics. They're very interesting characters, unique characters. Their relationship with the Flash has always been unique. So that'd be my number one. I'd also have to throw out one that hasn't been mentioned. It's one of those Netflix shows, Iron Fist, because I'm a huge fan of martial arts cinema, Hong Kong films, stuff like that. Grew up watching Bruce Lee every weekend. So I'm kind of excited about the potential for a martial arts-based comic book property to come on, so long as the fight sequences are done well. And Iron Fist is kind of a neat character on his own. So that's kind of the other one that I'm most anticipating. And as far as a property that I would like to see develop, this shouldn't surprise anyone that knows me, Nightwing. I would love a Nightwing show based on the one that I would like to see would actually be based on the Chuck Austin, for God's sake. That's opening up a whole new can of worms. Chuck Dixon run on Nightwing, where he became the police officer in Bloodhaven and also was Nightwing by night. I think that's a really interesting concept. Very cool character. My favorite character in all of comics, Dick Grayson. I think it would be cool to see him get his own show and get to maybe cross over with Arrow a little bit. We mentioned that before.
Did we?
No. We did, and we did. We mentioned did we? I don't know.
It a secret. No. We weren't using Game of the Dead.
Oh yeah, well what I meant was any character that might have applied to our previous conversation could get their own show. That would be awesome. Well, on that note, gentlemen,
don't worry, I'll forget by the time I start watching it.
I'm going to send us to our own little break here. Thanks for listening to this point. We'll be back with a little bit of a fun all-time type category coming up after this. Everybody loves lists, so we're just going to do top picks for some things here. So stay with us, and we'll be back after this break.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week, placetobenation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today, plus be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, placetobenation.com.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials one and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on PlaceToBeNation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and... Shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, this sounds terrible. The Titans of Wrestling... Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans of Wrestling are...
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for a show at Breakdown Matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Pav. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling. You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vanderberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on PlaceToBeNation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, this is Ben Morse from Marvel.com as well as the Brad and Chad Show, and I've got a new podcast. Well, I'm part of a new podcast, Place to Be Nation's Main Event. Hosted by Scott Criscolo every other week, it's a roundtable discussion with myself, Andrew Reich, Steve Willey, Jordan Duncan, and an assortment of special guests as we talk wrestling today, the big questions, and our feelings. Please, please, please check this podcast out, because if the ratings go down, I know I'm the first head on the chopping block for Justin Rosero. See you guys every other week on Place to Be Nation's Main Event.
I'm Scott Criscolo, and your new home for sports is Place to Be Nation's Extra Point. Join me and the doctor, George Urbelino, for your sports hookup, whether it's NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA, colleges, or the Cowboys MMA Blitz.
Forget about it. Plus, join me for my prescription where I will solve all the world's sports problems with my own brand of medicine.
That's Place to Be Nation's Extra Point here on PlaceToBeNation.com.
In Rhode Island and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers. And a fully stocked bar, Bonehead's has something for everyone. Bonehead's also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Don't forget to check out our fantastic podcasts as well, including the voice of Ring of Honor, Kevin Kelly, exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Also, be sure to check out our friends at thehistoryofwwe.com, prowrestlingonly.com, Scott Keith blog at rspwfaq.net, and piledriverwrestling.net.
Welcome back, everyone. We hope you enjoyed your break from our long-winded comic book ramblings. We're going to get into something that'll open up the conversation a little bit, probably, and give us a chance to look back on our own history with television comic book properties. I'm going to ask each person on the panel your favorite live-action comic book TV show of all time, going all the way back to Batman in the 60s or even further if there was one. Let's start with Nick. Nick Duke, what is your favorite live-action comic book-based television show?
And you just said it. As a Batman fan, I know it's – and you got to understand, I'm a hardcore, you know, fan of the Bat. It's difficult for many people who are as hardcore as I am to understand the love I have for the 60s Adam West Batman show, but you have to understand everybody starts somewhere. And that Batman show was my first exposure to the character. It was my first exposure to a superhero of any kind that I can vividly remember. My dad used to record those old shows off of the Family Channel back before it was Fox Family and now ABC Family. He would record those for me, and I have, you know, old VHSs of marathons of that show still hanging around somewhere. And it's just, you know, there are different incarnations of Batman, like there are different incarnations of any character. And I've always been one who finds the camp element of Batman to be an acceptable in, you know, interpretation of the character, so long as you're not trying to bring it in with any other serious elements. It's a reason why I find something like Batman and Robin to not really be that offensive to me, which is also blasphemous to many Batman fans. But that 60s Adam West Batman show is just – it's so iconic. It stands the test of time in terms of – still to this day, it's entertaining. And it's so cool because when I was a kid, I would watch it and take it completely seriously at face value. And now I watch it and enjoy it on a completely different level, which is so cool that it can appeal to both the adult and the child in me, which is awesome. And I'm pumped that it's finally getting a DVD release this year, and I will be there day one to pick up that box set.
Let me ask you this, Nick. You kind of got into a little bit there, but kind of explain the difference for you. You say that you accept the camp, but yet one of your complaints about Grant Morrison's Batman was that it was too campy. What's the difference there to you?
To me, the camp, interpretation of Batman is one that stands alone by itself and almost in a corner, separate from everything else. Grant Morrison's entire concept of the character was not that it was a campy version, but that he envisioned it as everything in Batman's past, from the 1929, you know, Detective Comics number 27 on up, or whatever it is, you know, or 39, I guess. He envisioned it as everything in publication history happened. He was trying to create a version of the character that reconciled something like The Dark Knight Returns or The Killing Joke with that campy version. It was a weird amalgamation of the two, which is another reason why, in terms of the film franchises, I've always found Batman Forever to be far more egregious to me. Something that I would, to this day, I don't ever want to watch Batman Forever. If it's on, I'll change the channel. But if Batman and Robin's on TV, I'll flip in for 15, 20 minutes because it's funny. It's fun. It's lighthearted. To me, I take Batman and Robin as Joel Schumacher's, you know, homage or love letter to Adam West, whereas I view Batman Forever and Grant Morrison's you know, Batman as this weird, you know, hybrid of things that just don't really work in combination together. You know, Batman Forever is something like trying to mix that Burton weird gothic tone with the camp of the 60s show, and it doesn't vibe for me personally. I'm not saying that it's not a completely valid approach to the character for other people, but it's not what I think of when I, you know, when I think of Batman. I guess a good way to put it would be to say, I don't want the Neapolitan ice cream of Batman. I either want the chocolate, the vanilla, or the strawberry, not all three together at one time.
Very good. Well, Todd, what about you? What is your favorite live-action comic book television show?
I'm sorry. I have to pick up my job because somebody just defended Batman and Robin.
Oh, I've done it before, and I'll do it till my dying day.
Wow. Have an ice day.
And that's why I enjoy it. Come on, man. Arnold.
Bane would like to know how you feel about his depiction in that film.
Holy God.
Get some Tom Hardy-voiced Bane in that movie, it just takes it up. Like, to this whole other...
That's the problem, though. They went with silent, grunting, neon...
And I'm not...
I think he had any lines, did he?
I'm not saying, like, Batman and Robin is a great movie or anything. I'm saying I can watch it and derive enjoyment from it.
Yeah, I like Arnold. I can enjoy or derive it from Arnold. And from Uma Thurman's Everything You See and Everything You Get.
Uma Thurman is Arnold's one-liners, you know, George Clooney's ridiculous... You know, bat suit, his bat credit card, all that stuff. And an underrated element of that movie, while I'm not saying she was good, Alicia Silverstone was in it, which meant that Chris O'Donnell was in it less. And that's always a good thing, Chris O'Donnell being something less.
And the internet mission now, if they choose to accept it, is to go and dub in Tom Hardy's Bane voice over the actor that played
what
him
could
in
you
Batman
really say
and
Robin. Like, Jesus, I'm lifting a giant boulder now.
Nice. Anytime Uma Thurman talks to him, I want him to say, "And you think this gives you power over me?"
Yeah, I mean, you know, Batman and Robin is terrible, but it's like it's that bad kind of, it's that good kind of terrible, you know.
You feel in charge.
Also, didn't the guy that played Bane in Batman and Robin go on to wrestle Hulk Hogan at Uncensored in the Ultimate Solution? The Ultimate Solution, yeah.
Yeah.
Wasn't his name Jeep?
Jeep. His name was Jeep, which is kind of
his name was Jeep.
Jeep Swinson, no doubt, no less. So,
no doubt.
Yeah, I mean, I, you know, I understand that my opinion of favoring Batman and Robin over Batman Forever is a controversial opinion to have. But you also have to remember the background I come from. Like, Two-Face is my favorite villain in all of Batman lore. And to see Tommy Lee Jones' version where he just flips the coin until he gets the result he wants pisses me off to no end. So Batman Forever is already in the shitter, not to mention Jim Carrey's "Hey, you just act like Jack Nicholson," you know, interpretation of the Riddler, and myriad other things. You know, Chris O'Donnell doing, you know, a version of Robin that's approximately 35 years old or what have you. You know,
holy rusted metal Batman.
Yeah, a lot of things about that movie really piss me off. Whereas Batman and Robin, I can watch and be like, there's a lot of bad here, but I don't take it as seriously because there's no Two-Face and not, you know, coming out of Batman Returns, I was kind of hoping for something better. I remember even as a kid hating Batman Forever, but I'm rambling and we'll go back to Todd now.
Todd, your favorite live-action comic book television show?
I think it's got to be a tie between just the single-mindedness of The Incredible Hulk, which was kind of the same show every single week, but I loved it. And I watched it live. I was, you know, 6-7 years old when it was on. But I would have to say between The Hulk and what we eventually got with Smallville. Smallville worked within its limitations very well. It couldn't do the entire story of Clark Kent Superman. I mean, it was no flights, no tights. But at times what we got, although it was very inconsistent, you got to see Aquaman. You got to see some lesser known
Green Arrow
Superman villains. You got to see the Justice Society.
Yeah, the Justice Society episode was one of my favorites, actually.
Yeah, it was written by Jeff Johns. You got to see a whole season based around Brainiac, which was cool. So yeah, I would say between Incredible Hulk for one thing, which was just seeing the Hulk on TV, and it was just like it didn't interact with any of the other Marvel heroes, at least until the movies were made in the early 80s. And then Smallville, which was just 10 seasons of world building. And the guys, Goff and Miller, I think they were the names, the producers, taking the Superman mythos, contemporizing it just a little bit, and making it something that a lot of people outside of your normal comic book fan would watch. It had its faults. It was a CW show, to be sure, far more than Arrow has turned out to be. And Lana Lang is terrible, as we were talking about earlier on today. Lana Lang has no redeeming qualities, especially when she married Lex, and it's just, oh. But Smallville is still a pretty cool show, and to me, the high point still for comic series on TV, live action.
Well, get back to The Incredible Hulk for just a moment. I loved that show when I was a kid watching it in syndication. The only thing that I'll say is that, like, and this is not a bad thing at all, but was I the only kid that was terrified by Lou Ferrigno, like, in the green outfit and everything? And, like, he scared the hell out of me as a kid.
He was scary. I had a conversation at Sacramento Wizard World about this with Lou Ferrigno himself. I got a picture and got to meet him and talk to him very briefly in my little photo op. But I told him I was initially very scared of the Hulk. But Lou Ferrigno made an appearance on the Mr. Rogers show to explain how the Incredible Hulk character is a make-believe. And you got to see him put the makeup on. It was very behind the scenes and, you know, fourth wall for its time. And those are on YouTube somewhere. And I don't know if anybody else ever saw those. I'm considerably older than you guys. I'm a Generation Xer here. But it really was something that was important to me as a kid, just having that explanation and that personal touch. And that was neat to talk about that with Lou Ferrigno. And he said, thank you very much. A lot of kids, you know, a lot of people who live through that come up and talk to him about that. He's still surprised. So
that's awesome. Certainly a very defined the character for most of America, I think. Now we're going to move along to Tim here and get your all-time favorite live action comic book show.
Okay. For starters, let me say that, to be honest, I don't like a lot of these. Like, the track record of the live action adaptations of comic series until recently, with like The Walking Dead and some of the stuff we talked about already, has not been great. I'd probably give it to the old Adam West Batman. Especially watching it now as an adult, that is pretty funny. Like, you know, if you're, you know, when there's nothing else on and you're having, you know, kind of a quiet night alone, you flip on the TV and there it is on, you know, my network TV or whatever in the way down in the 200s, depending on your local cable provider. And there it is. And you're like, all right, whatever, it'll do. And you're eating a cheese sandwich over the sink and maybe you're a little bit intoxicated. It's better than nothing.
Oh,
I mean,
man.
It's entertaining.
Todd, Tim, one of my favorite memories of, you know, a couple of years ago, I lived in North Alabama. And one of my favorite memories of being up there is one of my best friends from college, Jeremy Reynolds, who might listen to this. I don't know if he will. He and I splitting like three bottles of wine and watching like six episodes of that show over the course of about 2 hours. And it just being the most hilarious experience of the past 5 years. Like, it's just mind-blowing.
One of Vincent Price's last great roles, I feel.
Oh, Egghead, King Tut, Shame. Not Shane,
Shame.
But Shame.
Shame.
Just so many, like, hilarious things that happen in that show.
You know, Cesar Romano with the makeup smeared over his mustache. I mean,
and honestly, like, if we're putting, like, you know, film adaptations of the Riddler in a list, is Frank Gorshin's not still at the top?
Yeah.
Like, oh, I mean, absolutely. Has anyone done that character better since? Even as campy as it was? You could make an argument maybe for the video game, you know,
that was my point, yeah.
But other than that, really, like, if we're excluding video games, has anyone done it better than Frank Gorshin?
Outside of voice work, no. The guy who did the voice of him in Batman the Animated Series was great, but outside of that, no. Any live action interpretation of the Riddler, that he owns it.
Yeah. I'll give it to that. I mean, honestly, for lack of much in the way of meaningful competition, this conversation has reminded me that there was such a thing as Mutant X, and it had nothing to do with the comic series, and the show was not good. I mean, don't watch it. I'm not putting it up there as something that, you know, is this great overlooked, lost a series or anything, but That brings me back to an earlier conversation, and this is getting off topic, which, like we said, we never do. But for worst series of all times, Mutant X, the series, oh, my God, you guys, you've got to read this. Howard Mackey at his finest. Again, nothing to do with the TV series, but it's one of those things that you love to hate. Like, I can't even say that it was, like, bad, offensively bad, the way that, you know, Chuck Austin comics were and some of the stuff that Scott Liddell was. This was, like, so, like, phoned in and just, like, hack work, awful shit, like, especially towards the end. It's amazing. You have got to read. It's stuff
you know,
like, go ahead.
Do you know who wrote the whole series, every episode?
Howard Mackey.
No, Avi Arad.
Oh, you're talking about the TV series? I think you guys are talking
the TV series.
Yes. Tim's talking about the comic series. Todd's talking about the TV series.
Okay.
We've gotten so off topic. It's
yes, I'm sure the TV series is nowhere near as bad as the comic that it has nothing to do with other than the name, but did he really write the TV series? Oh, my God.
Mackey wrote 6 episodes, but Arad wrote the whole thing and created it and brought it to the screen.
No kidding. Wow.
Truly something to hang his hat on.
Yeah.
John Shea was on that too. John Shea.
Yes,
he was.
Yes, one of
the
great
common denominator movies. Here in this show.
And
but
also,
yes, please read
awesome,
the comic. It's like over 30 awesome issues. Please go out and read it. Please, you will love to hate it.
We always need stuff that we love to hate here at the Place to Be Nation Comic Book Roundtable Podcast of Doom. Available.
Keep it positive.
Havoc blows up the moon. That's all I'll say. Havoc blows up the moon because you can. It's Mutant X.
Absolutely. Well, that leaves us with you, Russell. Your favorite live-action, comic book-based television series.
You guys want camp? The let's see. What years did this run? It was 1988 to 1992 Superboy TV show.
Yep.
Oh! Yep.
You want camp? There's camp. Gerard Christopher, he was the guy that wound up being known as Superboy. He played him for more episodes. But John Newton was the guy that started that series as Superboy. And through a demanding pay raise and a very public DUI arrest, he was released from his contract. But
to star in the final season of Melrose Place, which we've also mentioned. So once again, we're keeping things tied together.
We are keeping it classy here. But I watched that show every single Saturday when I was a kid. It was just, you know, the TV show that I look forward to the most. I watched every single episode of it. And when you watch it now, it's really bad. It is one of the most awful shows ever produced. The acting is terrible. The effects are laughable. I mean, just by any standards. I swear to God, you can see the wires whenever they do the flying.
The Bizarro episode. Yeah,
we saw the clips of the Bizarro episode. One of the Bizarro episodes. There were multiple Bizarro episodes, but the one that we watched or clips from, Greg, was that was one of the worst. But I vividly remember there also being a vampire episode where Superboy encounters Dracula. Lana gets turned into a vampire, and she's somehow able to bite Superboy and turn him into one as well. And I remember the sound effect of her doing it. It sounded like somebody biting into a Coke can, which was hysterical. It was funny to me even at the time. And how he beats them is equally ridiculous, because he, like, no shit, he grabs a couple of girders, holds them together, and heat visions them into a cross and holds it up.
Would it be easier just to heat vision them?
you would think that would have been the first thing that came to mind, but
it's
no.
The Rube Goldbergian Super Bowl.
Yeah. I am into the sun. Isn't it impressive, though, in you know, levels of quality, but DC slash Warner Brothers had a Superman show on the air almost all the way for, 22 years from 89? When did Superboy start? 88, 89? Yeah, 88 until Smallville in 2011, with you count in Lois and Clark, which ran until 1997, I think. So Smallville
Superman animated series.
Yeah, but so, yeah.
That's pretty impressive. Warner Brothers has done well with at least keeping Superman in some form on television until, you know, recently. We don't have him on TV now, but we got movies coming, so I guess that's, you know, that's fine. But the old Superboy series was one that I watched just religiously, man. I followed that show so closely, and I mean, I remember being on like the edge of my seat. Especially, there was a season finale when they were advertising this big event to happen, and Superboy gets hit by at close range by some missile that Lex Luthor had put together, and he falls for like several stories from the top of this long tower, and they have him in a hospital room at the end, and I remember the doctor saying, it's like, we've done all we can, but he will never walk again. And the yeah, that I was like, you know, I was like, oh no. But I mean, what does he need with that? He can fly. But just the fact that the next episode had him in a wheelchair for a while, and it was supposed to be the big inspirational moment whenever he finally picks himself up out of the wheelchair and is able to walk again. It was, oh god.
So are you going with that as your favorite?
Yeah, I'm actually going to that as my for pure nostalgia, because like Nick's enjoyment of Batman from the 60s, getting like one form of enjoyment as a kid to now enjoying it for something completely for different reasons. That's my enjoyment of Superboy. Now it's one that I can absolutely watch and take as a complete joke, as hilarious. And you know, you mentioned that Lana Lang had no redeeming qualities whatsoever from Smallville, but this version of Lana Lang was actually likable in many respects, and up until the recent Greg Pak Action Comics interpretation of her, I would say that would have been my favorite version of Lana Lang.
Very cool. We're going to stick with you, Russell, and ask the flip side of this, least favorite live action comic book television series of all time.
Dear God. You know, picking one is really, really difficult, but I don't know if I can count it as a TV series. It was made for TV movies. Anybody remember The Amazing Spider-Man live action?
Yep. Sure.
No, I don't.
Had a series. It had a few episodes.
Yeah, it was a movie, and then it got picked up for a season or a half season.
This was like mid-70s, late-70s, right?
Nicholas Hammond, yep.
Yeah, it did not last long, and with good reason. There, no supervillains really to speak of, but there was a hypnotic gas episode. I believe that was also the episode where Spider-Man fights a lion. A real lion. No shit, a lion.
I might take the lion, given it's 70s Spider-Man.
And he only had one web shooter, I guess, you know, effects budget being what they are, they could only afford one. And every time he would swing from a building, it was very obvious a dude hanging from a crane, and they just kind of swung it back and forth and hoped that he did not fall. And climbing up the sides of buildings, wow.
Is it like the old Adam West Batman effect of they clearly shot it with them just pulling a rope on a flat surface and just turning the film 90 degrees?
Pretty much, except they shot it overhead, and they tried to superimpose cars going by down below him so that it looked like, oh, he's really climbing up the wall. Like, no, he's not. No. Because, for one thing, he's like doing kind of a dog run up the wall. So at some point or another, if you watch closely enough, you see that his feet and hands are away from the wall. But yet he's still able to keep going, and it's like
he's got an aura around his body. It's
yeah,
okay.
Exactly. It's like there's some kind of magical ability to hold himself close enough to the wall that he doesn't just like say whoops and fall to his death. I will give him a little credit for I won't. The J. Jonah Jameson interpretation of that show was nothing worth writing about. It was bad. Bad interpretation all the way around. And sadly, that was one of the things that I also watched as a kid, because I was a huge Spider-Man fan, and that was the only thing that was on at the time. But as I got older, I was like, this is not even worth watching for camp factor. This is just bad TV.
Indeed it is. And actually, I just realized I forgot to give my favorite and least favorite of the live-action shows. I guess for my favorite, I'll have to be honest and go with Arrow. I don't remember... I don't remember ever seeing a live action comic show that I thought was better executed. Maybe with Walking Dead being the possible exception, but for something that's like a superhero concept that's more special to me and harder, I think, to pull off on television, I've just thoroughly enjoyed Arrow from the beginning. And I'll also throw a little mention out. You mentioned it during the break, Russell. Human Target was fantastic, I thought. The best Absolutely. Fight scenes I've ever seen on television. Some wonderful chemistry between the cast. And the show was actually, I thought, better before Fox mingled in it and forced them to change some things in the second season. But great show. And as far as least favorite, again, you mentioned, Russell, there's a lot of ground to cover here. So many bad shows, but I'm actually going to go with one that wasn't based on a comic book, but was flirting with the same ideas as comic books. And it's one that I loved for one season, but hated thereafter. And that's Heroes. I thought the first season was really good. Well, you know, I actually missed the Shawn Michaels, John Cena hour long match to go watch an episode.
Oh yes, you did, sir. And you'll never live it down.
Indeed. And I that's how much I loved Heroes at the time. I loved that show. But as
we can debate over whether it was Heroes, but that's neither here nor there.
There may have been a female involved, but that the premise of Heroes was cool. And then in the second season, it's like they didn't expect to get a second season, so they didn't know where they were going. And so you get like half of the season is like Hero in feudal Japan, and it was incredibly boring, as almost every comic book property based in feudal Japan ends up being. And then you get just weird cross sections of characters and teasing a face turn, so to speak, for the main villain from season one. And I just thought it turned into a terrible show by the end. I don't know if anybody agrees, but
and you know, Greg, what's funny is, just to show you what kind of world we live in, Heroes is getting a revival, and Green Lantern and Young Justice will remain buried. It's just
they're not buried. They're on Netflix. They debuted this weekend on Netflix, so we can watch them.
The two seasons of Young Justice, which if you've seen the second season of Young Justice, was clearly setting up for a third season that would have been, you know, animation television to be remembered, you know, yep. and Green Lantern, which was doing the same thing, by the way. We could do an entire podcast about my hatred of Cartoon Network and their handling of their DC Comics animation properties, but we'll get to that eventually.
Indeed. So let's go over to Tim. What would you mentioned you've not been a fan of live action comic book television. What would you pick as the coup de grace, if you will, of your idea of the terrible live-action comic book television show?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Spider-Man from the 70s. That was a real piece of shit. Russell's recollection of it is a lot better than mine, but it's just, you can't even hate watch it. There's just nothing to get out of it. I mean, you put it on thinking, okay, this should be at least, if nothing else, entertaining. You can make fun of it, but there's really nothing there. I mean, it's really
out a photo album of an old girlfriend while drinking and thinking, oh, I'm just going to laugh at her, and then you just wind up crying.
Yeah, that's okay.
That was
that's
depressing.
Maybe yeah, it was, not that, the not the first was, analogy I would have thought of, but appropriate nonetheless.
That's where I go.
So I mean, yeah, that's it, and that's really all I have to say. I mean, I can't really harp on this particular topic because. Yeah, it is a little bit depressing the what we have to work with here. So, but that's the worst of the worst for sure.
Let's go to you, Todd. What about your pick for least favorite live action comic book or comic book related television show? Todd?
Well,
mute button.
Go ahead, Todd.
My kids are running in and out, so I turn on the mute button in between questions. So, thanks. I will have to say my pick is based on a comic that I enjoy over the years. It's been written by different writers such as Chuck Dixon and Gail Simone, but it was turned into a kind of a high-concept show on the WB network, and that's called Birds of Prey from 2002-2003. It lasted half of a season. It was pretty crappy all around, but it was an interesting concept, you know, is basically the Huntress from the future, but Earth 2's Huntress, right? The daughter of Bruce Wayne and Selina Kyle, Catwoman, trying to avenge them. And it had but it also had the Barbara Gordon as Oracle character, and it also had our friend Black Canary, but it was not very good, and it had a lot of potential, but it should have been a lot better than it was. But I think the network attitude, or at least the TV attitude for superheroics, was much different in those days. Nobody was in costume ever. You know, it's based on Smallville. Nobody wore costume until the very end, for the most part. I think the last thing that had true superhero versions of the characters was the Flash show in early 90s, which I can't believe didn't get picked because it wasn't very good.
Let me ask you this. Do you have any recollection? Was there, because I never actually watched this show. I just heard about how bad it was. But were there ever any nods to, like, Batman and Catwoman on the show?
Yeah, they showed, you know, Catwoman in her kind of her Batman Returns outfit, the Michelle Pfeiffer outfit. She wasn't played by Michelle Pfeiffer, obviously. But they mentioned, and Alfred was on the show, and I believe they would have some kind of audio presence of Batman.
One cameo of Batman in one episode, if I'm not mistaken, but it was very brief, as I recall.
In the final episode, they had Harley Quinn appeared, and they were teasing that for the follow-up, but then that never happened.
Wasn't the Joker kind of in a cameo, too?
Mark Hamill was the Joker.
Yeah.
Did they have him in, like, full face paint, or was it just, like, a voiceover? Oh, interesting.
I think it exists somewhere on YouTube where there's Mark Hamill dressed up as the Joker, basically doing the Joker from Batman the Animated Series, but, you know, 20 years in the future, or the Earth 2 future, I don't know. They created a universe, created a concept just for this show, and it the world wasn't ready for it, and probably it's a good thing because it wasn't very good.
Well, he did not have a large role, right? I mean, you didn't see a whole lot of him, did you?
I don't believe so. But he's there. I'm looking at IMDb right now. He was there for two episodes at least. So,
interesting. Yeah. Well, Nick, what about your least favorite live action show?
I can be brief because Todd nailed it. It's Birds of Prey. You know, you got characters like the Huntress and Oracle and Black Canary who deserve so much better, and they were given this pile of shit that they had to deal with. I don't have anything else to say. I mean, Birds of Prey was God. Like, it wasn't even like the, hey, let me rip this because it's fun to blast it bad. It was more like a Green Lantern movie, soul-crushingly bad, that you just don't ever want to think about ever again. Because, I mean, the concept for the show, like, if we got a modern-day Birds of Prey with, I'll just throw out the idea, like, you know, Black Canary, Huntress, and Felicity Smoke from Arrow, man, that's something I'd watch. But the Birds of Prey we got, no, never again.
No way. Which, by the way, you mentioned the Green Lantern movie. For those listening, once again, at PlaceToBeNation.com, this Friday, you too can listen, or read, rather, as Nick and I go through our emotional catharsis as we discuss the Green Lantern movie. But that's another
story.
It really
is like the seven steps of grief, or whatever they call it, you know, where it delves from anger to bargaining to acceptance, and eventually you just come to terms with the fact that it's just not very good.
It is. But so you can catch that on the website this week. This brings me, Tim mentioned a few minutes ago the history of live action comic book television. It has not exactly been, let's put it kindly, it's not been consistently good over the, you know, let's say 50, 60 year history of comic books on television. We didn't even mention the old 50s Superman show, which was good for its time. But that on the inverse, animated television has been a boon for comic books pretty much since the dawn of television, from the Max Fleischer Superman cartoons, which were aired in syndication a lot, to, of course, Super Friends, and then Batman, and all, and on down the line. Let's pick out our favorite animated show, and I'll start us out and go with mine, which is Justice League / Justice League Unlimited. I count them as one giant show. To me, a lot of people are going to pick Batman, I'm sure, and it deserves it. It was amazing. It's what started it all. But I've never seen on television a better, more executed, overarching story than what Justice League and later Justice League Unlimited picked up on, the Cadmus arc, which managed to tie things all the way back to the original Batman animated series with the – I don't know if you remember the Professor Milo that was working on animal hybrids on Batman. He ends up coming into play later when they basically create or capture Doomsday in Justice League Unlimited, and it creates this incredible overarching story, ties into Batman Beyond. I think it's not only the best animated comic book show, I think it's the best comic book show, period, that I've ever seen. Just an outstanding show from beginning to end, and I wish it could have gone another 10 years.
Hmm.
And I guess now that that opens that up, I've said mine, let's move on to Todd. Let me get your favorite animated comic book show of all time.
It's hard to differentiate the any of the series from the Paul Dini, Bruce Timm, DC Universe, but I'll say Batman the Animated Series just because it was so good and just so different from anything else at the time coming out in the early 90s. It's iconic, and it led to even better things, or even cooler things with the expansion of the universe. But that whole decade, no, about 15 years of animation is so cool, including the Superman series and Batman yep. Beyond. It just it's unprecedented, and it's the absolute high mark for animated superheroics.
Absolutely, and it touched on a lot of emotional themes that I don't think so-called children's TV shows, especially cartoons, had ever really touched on before. Plus the really dark animation, just so ahead of its time. But let's go to Tim and get your favorite animated comic book show of all time.
Yeah, it's Batman the Animated Series. I mean, I feel like you can almost ask this question and say other than, because that's what everybody's going to say. But yep. Yeah, all of the Bruce Timm, Paul Dini stuff. I mean, a show is only going to be as good as its weakest link, and there was just nothing about that series that was weak. I mean, from the animation to the writing to, you know, just
the voice
just
work.
The voice, oh my God, Kevin Conroy just killed it. So it's just, you know, that's honestly the best other media adaptation of Batman in anything. So even their worst episodes were better than every other animated series at the time. I mean, I can't gush over that series more. But I guess, you know, we heard it at the beginning of the episode. I guess I'll give an honorable mention to X-Men. Wasn't great. Doesn't necessarily stand the test of time, but for a good few years there, that was kind of as good as you're going to get as far as an adaptation of the 90s X-Men. Right, so the Jim Lee art pretty much brought to the screen, brought to your television week in and week out. I can remember when, you know, that really took off, and it coincided when a time when the comics were really hot, of course. So it was just that perfect blend of everything that's going on in comics. You know, going to your local comic store every weekend. And trying to keep up with the show is just this great mix. And not that it was a perfect adaptation of the stories you were reading, but
And they had a lot of limitations, I think, because of the censors and things like that at the time that Batman didn't have.
Yes, they did. And especially towards the end of their run, they really kind of dropped the hammer on them. I've actually read some of the censor notes on scripts for that show. And it's unbelievable how they neutered it. Like, I always sort of thought that they lost a step towards the end, and I didn't know exactly why. I couldn't put my finger on, okay, what do I not like about this show anymore? Am I just getting older, or are they just kind of, you know, is it just like they're just trying to keep it on the air for syndication or what? But no, like, the restrictions that that network standards and practices put on them were like, I mean, they really, it became extremely toothless towards the end. But for, I'd say, the first three seasons, it got pretty ambitious. And,
through the Phoenix stuff. Yeah, it was great. The Dark Phoenix saga and all that.
Yeah, that was absolutely the height of that show. And you know, for what it was really good for a good solid 3 years there.
Also interesting that it took a different approach than Batman took, in terms of Batman was mainly standalone episodes that would occasionally call back to previous episodes. X-Men was the first cartoon I'd seen that told what felt like a giant story from episode to episode, where everything seemed to lead into what came after it.
Yeah, each season was an arc for sure. Again, for the first 3 years, towards the end, not so much. But they had a specific story that they were telling, and the first episode was going to dovetail and coincide with their finale, and they structured it like you know only 13 episodes a season, but still, I mean they structured it for that serialized storytelling, even though it was just a Saturday morning cartoon. So. Yeah, that was kind of unheard of at the time.
Absolutely. Well, let's go over to Nick and talk about your favorite animated comic book series of all time.
Batman the Animated Series.
No way.
any explanation?
I mean, if you want me to talk about Batman the Animated Series, I could do it for hours on end, but, you know, I'll... So many characters, but I'll focus. I'll try to drill it down to one. When I sit down and read a Batman comic today, whether it's a comic that existed in the 1970s or one that was produced in 2014, if I'm reading the Joker, in my head it's the voice of Mark Hamill, and it always will be, no matter how iconic a performance comes on film from Heath Ledger or Jack Nicholson or whoever plays the character in the future. I just can't imagine anyone topping that specific incarnation of the character for me. Outside of Batman the Animated Series, I'll throw a little bit of love to one that I don't think anybody else is going to touch on. Greg, at the beginning, at the top, you mentioned Justice League and Justice League Unlimited and how it kind of expanded a universe and really did a great job of juggling so many characters. Well, I'll give you the Marvel counterpart to that, Gone Too Soon. Avengers, Earth Mightiest Heroes, only ran 2 seasons and should never have been canceled. There are many reasons why I love Jeff Loeb for his Batman work and hate him for everything else, but that would be near the top of the list. He's heading up Marvel TV now. Avengers, Earth Mightiest Heroes never should have gone anywhere. It should still be running to this day. It was fantastic. It tied in so well to the movies, like with the guy who voiced Tony Stark, obviously doing a pretty decent Robert Downey Jr. impression. There were so many things about that show that just worked on so many levels, and it never should have closed the story.
I think that's a good point. I don't think it ever really, for me, reached the highs that Justice League reached. But I'll say this: I don't know if I've mentioned this before. I never really was a fan of the Avengers growing up. I never read the comics. I always found the X-Men far more fascinating than any of the Avengers. And it was really Earth's Mightiest Heroes that made me love the concept, other than the movie, obviously. But still, Earth's Mightiest Heroes introduced me to concepts like Ultron and concepts like the Masters of Evil, which I thought would have been cheesy. But it was a great show.
Well, Greg, to be fair, I mean, you know, it didn't hit the highs of Justice League because it didn't have the opportunity to. Justice League was given 2 seasons with the core team before expanding into 2 more seasons of Justice League Unlimited. Avengers got 1 season, a fantastic first season that I would put up there with any other form of, you know, if we're just picking 1 season of comic book television, it's right up there with anything else. And yet, then the second season, about a third of the way through, they got the word, hey, wrap up every plot thread you've been sewing since the first episode in this season. And yes, the end of the second season feels rushed, but how could you expect it to not feel rushed given the mandate they were, because Marvel and Disney were so set on starting anew for some reason that I still don't understand to this day. But if you haven't checked out Avengers Earth Mightiest Heroes, I think it's on Netflix, both seasons. The first season in particular is fantastic, and even though the second season's a bit rushed, it's still a solid incarnation. And one of the cool things I loved about Earth's Mightiest Heroes, in the second season, they do a crossover episode that has Spider-Man in it, and I took it kind of as a, hey, fuck you to Marvel. They got the voice actor from Spectacular Spider-Man to voice Spider-Man in the crossover episode, and Disney wound up redubbing him with Drake Bell or whoever it is from Ultimate Spider-Man. Because they didn't want.
Because Spec also got canceled.
Because Spec got canceled before its time as well. So I mean, there's just a whole deal. I mean, you could really talk for a long time about like the way that these respective animated shows have kind of been dicked over by their networks. I mean, whether it be Spectacular Spider-Man or everything that's ever aired on Cartoon Network.
Well, talking about corporate interference seems as good a place as any to kind of start wrapping things up here. And before we close, I'm going to close with a lightning round question. This is going to be very quick, very, very quick. Just throw out the titles. I'm going to ask you, not all of us have pull lists, but for those of you who have pull lists, it's going to be the three books on your pull per month that you have to read every month, and you if you had to drop everything else, you had to keep these three. Tim or myself, more trade waiters, just books that you enjoy reading the trades, three. I'm going to start with Nick because he kind of had this idea from the get-go. So, Nick, three books off the top of your head. Go.
Thor, God of Thunder, Thor, God of Thunder, and Thor, God of Thunder. But on a serious note, Thor, God of Thunder, Batman, and Green Arrow right now.
All right. What about you, Todd?
Thor, God of Thunder, Batman, and Justice League.
All right. Russell?
You bastard. Action Comics, Batman, and Daredevil.
Tim?
Daredevil, Uncanny X-Men, and Swamp Thing.
Very cool. I'm going to go with Green Arrow, Batman, and Green Lantern Corps. And with that, we bring to an end our third monthly podcast. We didn't even touch all the topics we planned on, folks. We've got much more coming next month and the month after, hopefully. It's always a fun time to gather with Nick Duke, Todd Weber, Russell Sellers, and Tim Cable to chat comics, something we all love. And hopefully you'll join us next time if you enjoyed this one, and we've got more down the pipe. Don't miss Weber Has Issues, Sellers Points, New Hotness, Hard Traveling Fanboys, Fill-In Files. Don't miss any of our great content at placetobenation.com. So with that being said, and one final plug, we bid you all adieu. Take your pictures down.